Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Everyone, welcome. I'm Dr. Terry, and thanks for listening today. I have a very important program today because today's program will be about helping children cope with divorce. Now, studies show that about a half of American children will witness their parents' marriage end in divorce, yet only one third of those children will show negative reactions or outcomes. That means two-thirds of the children will successfully adjust to their parents' divorce and will not experience negative outcomes in the areas of education, emotional disorders, and behavioral problems. So it's extremely important for you and for all of us to understand what factors contribute to children's successful adjustment to parental divorce, and what factors contribute to anxiety, depression, aggression, and other issues in children. Now, my guest today is an expert in this area. Dr. Natasha Kendall is a marriage and family therapist who specializes in working with children, couples, and families in transition. She is the only provider of private, intensive, home-based parent coaching in Michigan. She believes that when her clients, especially children, feel safe and comfortable in their own homes, change in emotional health and subsequent behavioral change follow very quickly. Dr. Kendall has authored several articles, taught numerous graduate level classes, and has appeared on both TV and internet programs to discuss family and money issues. Now, Dr. Kendall, Natasha, and I have met several times in person, face to face. We've worked together, and I love her website, which is drsupernanny.com. What a great name, right? I can't remember who introduced us or how we first met, but I've loved her work, her parent coaching, and she is also the co-director of a nonprofit that specializes in educating and empowering women through the process of divorce. And that nonprofit is called Women's Divorce Resource Center, and their website is womensdivorce.org. So welcome to the program, Natasha. Thank you for being with us today.
Terry, thank you so much for having me. This is such a fun thing to do on this yucky, rainy Wednesday morning.
I agree completely. I agree. Now, I'm not sure how we first met. Do you remember?
I honestly don't remember. It's been at least 10, 11 years plus. I remember so clearly having lunch and sharing with you that I'm expecting my second daughter, who's now in sixth grade and five feet and 11 years old.
Wow.
I know it's been a long time, but how we originally connected, I honestly can't remember.
That's okay, but we've been, you know, working together, known each other for at least 10 or 11 years. So tell listeners then, what inspired you to become a therapist and a parenting coach? And just so listeners understand, in your opinion, what's the difference between coaching and therapy?
Okay, sure. It's actually two different questions. I'll answer the first one first. Therapy was really a very interesting field for me because I remember having these endless conversations with my girlfriends as a tween and a teen, trying to understand the relationships. And, you know, at that time, of course, it was all landlines. We were like huddling around the phone so parents can hear what we're talking about. And just being fascinated by why he said that. Why did she do that? So the area of relationships has always fascinated me. And then I chose the marriage and family therapy specialization in the area of psychotherapy, specifically because I wanted to work on relationships. And your question, coaching versus therapy, is an interesting question. And, you know, there are sort of guidelines that we look for. When is it therapy? When is it coaching? I will tell you what I love to do. I love to do parent coaching. where I talk to parents or parent for the benefit of their child. So this might be a situation where a child may be diagnosed with a disorder, physical or mental, emotional condition, and parents are just not sure how to approach the situation. If I have a kid with hyperactivity and attention deficit disorder, what do I do? What don't I do? Or it could be a situation where maybe a child is going through a difficult transition. Middle school is starting. How do I help my kid get through this? Or because we are talking about divorce, how do I talk to my child about the fact that dad and I are divorcing? What can I say? What should I avoid saying? So I help parents in a quiet, you know, peaceful privacy of my office think through all these issues, and then they go home and implement changes. On occasion, I have the entire family in my office, and we do family work. And sometimes I do individual work with either kids or kids, teenagers, or adults.
But I that's coaching. You're describing coaching. Modality.
Yeah. And the reason I use the word coaching is I kind of explain, I stand behind the parents. I'm their support system, right? I encourage, I educate, challenge occasionally.
I sign
homework and I check on homework. But I use the word coaching because a lot of the time people who are in my office are not really the patients. If you use the word therapy, there has to be some kind of medical or mental health condition. And that sometimes is the case, and sometimes it's not the case. Sometimes the parents are functioning just fine, but they have a challenge with their child. Sometimes it does happen that parents either have a pre-existing condition, anxiety, depression, attention problems, bipolar disorder, et cetera, or, and that happens quite often, the challenge of raising a child can actually lead to anxiety, depression, and other types of issues.
Absolutely.
Because parenting is a tough job.
It is a very challenging job. Now, before we get to helping children with parental divorce, let's talk about your work and how it affects you personally. You said you have two children, two daughters, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're married. How does your work with, you know, families and children and parents affect your own personal relationships or even how you parent yourself?
That's a great question, you know, and I don't think it's a simple answer how being in mental health affects my marriage and affects my parenting. I think what happens is a lot of the time I've caught myself being guilty of this. Small normative childhood issues just do not raise to the level of my awareness. You know, I tend to shrug things off because in my universe of dysfunction that I deal with on a daily basis, it just doesn't raise to the level of awareness. So I have to catch myself and think, okay, look, this may still be a normative issue, but your kid is upset. So it needs to be dealt with.
That's interesting. So the little things or the small things you're saying that another parent might listen to or be aware of or even be anxious about, because you're dealing with dysfunction at a larger scale, that you have to remind yourself that my child might be anxious because, you know, they have a test tomorrow or because, you know, they are worried about something with a friendship.
Exactly.
So you have to remind yourself.
This issue of looking at things through their lens is actually a common issue for first responders, military police, doctors, ER personnel, nurses, because all of that, you know, that helping profession and extremely, especially first responders, are used to a high level of trauma. So when I work with this personnel, and I'm thinking of a nurse in particular who and I have been working together for a while, I have to coach her, you know, you are an ER nurse, and so this wound may not be something that would be an ER level care, but your kid is hurting,
right?
And emotionally, not a physical problem.
Right. That's so interesting. You know, it reminds me of my childhood because my father was an MD, and when we would get sick, he would say, oh, it'll be fine. You know, you can just go to school. But yeah, I mean, I might have a fever of 102.
Just walk it up, Terry. You'll be fine.
Knock it up. But that has carried with me into my parenting as well. So it's very interesting, not only your profession and what you're doing, but also your childhood and how your parents treated your illnesses or mental health issues might also affect your parenting as well. Yeah. Very interesting.
And the second part that happens, interestingly, I find that because I deal with conflict quite often, there's always some kind of conflict. I value peace above all.
Right.
So I find myself being very choosy with fights that I pick and fights that I let go. Mm-hmm. I find myself giving my daughters a lot of freedoms to make age-appropriate decisions. I don't tell them what to do a lot of the time. I expect cooperation from them. And I find that that goal of peace and tranquility in a home that's comfortable to come home to is probably number one priority for myself and my husband. I'm not raising professional athletes or professional musicians. We don't really need Ivy League scholars. We want a happy home.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. And I'm sure that influenced your desire to have these private intensive home-based parent coaching sessions as well, so that when you go to the home in a parent or parents two or more home, that they're going to feel comfortable and they're more likely to share and to talk and to listen as well.
Yeah.
So your desire to have peace and comfort and happiness probably influenced your practice as well.
And I often tell parents, you're not wrong in desiring X and Y from your child, but is it worth the fight? Is
right.
it worth the price? There's a tension. There's always that relationship between control and intimacy. There is that two sides of that coin. You can control your child. You can raise a sort of a robot-like child, where every thought and every breath will be controlled, but you will have no relationship with that child.
Mm-hmm.
That intimate, deep, warm bond will not be there.
Right.
And on the flip side of that coin, if you're only going for intimacy and warmth without guidance, that doesn't work either. You have to have a good balance.
So you have to have a balance between being authoritative and having rules and structure and being there for your child or children so that they can confide in you and come to you when they need you. So let's talk about then parents, divorced parents and children, and how to help children with parental divorce. Now, at the beginning of the program, I said roughly half of all American children will experience parental divorce, but only one third will show negative adjustment. Are you surprised by those findings? Because I'm sure listeners are surprised when they heard those statistics, because we continue to hear that children are always adversely affected by parental divorce.
It's a bit of a stereotype in our society, I think. The act of divorce itself is not going to necessarily hurt kids' emotional growth, academic path, cognitive health. That act in itself is not necessarily going to hurt them. What will hurt them dramatically is the relationship between parents that's adversarial. So if parents continue to fight, whether it's in court, you know, filing motion after motion after motion after the divorce is done, or out of court, face-to-face, texting, on the phone, that parental negativity is what makes the biggest difference in children's outcomes.
And so you're saying that is one of the big factors that leads to successful outcomes. If two parents can not have conflict, can get along for the benefit of the children, either during the divorce or after the divorce, is what you're saying.
Let's do both.
Or both, right. Yes. Rather than an or.
You know, I always say that clearly you are divorcing your spouse for a reason. You may not love each other anymore. You may not be getting along anymore. But ideally, you would move that relationship, a failed relationship of intimacy, into a successful relationship of co-parents. And
so
I talk
how do you
about
do that?
Yeah,
how do you
team.
Do that, Natasha? I mean, how do you help parents do that, to look to the best, you know, interests of the child and have a okay, pleasant relationship? How do you help parents
right.
do that?
So I challenge parents to think of each other as a team member or coworker. And you move from a position of intimacy, disclosure, deep conversations, whether they're positive or negative, into a position of civil, minimum disclosure, and a working relationship. So I say, look, how would you talk to a coworker on a Monday morning? You might say to them, it was a great weekend and we had a lovely picnic at the park. And you leave it at that. You don't go into the big conversation about, would you believe my mother showed up and she said that and she did that? No, that's too intimate. You wouldn't say that to a coworker. That's the kind of relationship that you want with your co-parent.
But of course, divorce is very difficult and challenging, as we both know as therapists. And there are many emotional, financial challenges and changes. Yes. And there's a lot of anger between the two spouses. So how do you help them get rid of that anger first so they can treat the other parent as a co-worker?
I think anger is a stage. I talk about divorce adjustment very much like grief adjustment. And anger is definitely a stage of grief and a stage of divorce. I help people, and it's a process, to get past the anger, right? You have to get to a point where you start seeing the reason why this actually is an okay thing. If people are stuck in the angry place, it's very hard for them to move forward, and their children will never move forward. They will always be stuck in that mire of unpleasant emotions and feelings. And kids very deeply feel a split loyalty when parents get divorced and anger is present between them. Kids very deeply feel that, is it okay to love my dad if mom is angry?
Right.
Is it okay to say nice things about mom if dad is so enraged at her still? That split loyalty is truly the most emotionally difficult thing about divorce.
And that's so hard for
people.
Children, right? That's so hard because, you know, you don't know where to go and you don't. And I think also, Natasha, for listeners to understand that children do pick up on it, even if it's via text or a phone, that you don't have to even be face to face for kids to pick up on that anger and that conflict. Okay, so what is another factor that predicts or leads to successful outcomes for children after parental divorce?
So financial stability is number two, is economic stability. Kids don't have to have the latest iPhone. They don't have to have, you know, $130 leggings or whatever your teenage girl tells you she needs. For the record, that she doesn't need it. But they do need to be in a safe environment, in a stable housing situation, in a school district that works with their educational needs. Unfortunately, what happens as a consequence of divorce is financial stability is lost. So number two is financial stability. Not wealth, but some level of comfort, good health insurance, good access to, you know, medical care, psychological care. I always challenge people to think not necessarily in terms of, you know, she will never have this money, this is my money. Like, no. How is it going to affect your children?
Right.
They need resources to grow and develop. How is this going to affect them going forward? So number two, definitely financial stability.
And I know the research studies definitely support both of these. Lack of conflict, you know, a team approach to co-parenting, and financial stability and resources, that when children have both of those, they are significantly more likely to be able to adjust.
Correct.
Okay, number three, is there a third factor that you can give listeners?
I would like to put a third factor out there, and that is a relationship with both parents.
Mm.
Now, it doesn't have to be the same relationship. You don't necessarily have to have identical types of relationship with both parents. If you have 50-50 custody, great. And both parents will probably go to conferences, both parents will be there at nighttime, and both parents will be there at doctor's appointments. That's fine. That works for many families. It does not work for every family out there. So to have a relationship, however, whatever works for each set, for each dyad, parent, child. So sometimes it might be, you know, a very lovely, warm, caring weekend. For parents who don't live in the same country or not in the same state, it might be a two-week extended summer vacation together. But to maintain that bond, to maintain that relationship with both parents is absolutely crucial.
Absolutely. And I know listeners are probably thinking, though, Natasha, is it my responsibility as one parent to help my child have a relationship with the other parent?
You know, I think it depends on the age of the child. Certainly young kids need a little coaching on how to approach the other parent. But truly, I think the responsibility of a parent is to get out of the way and not impose our ideas on the other parent. So, true story, this happened in my office yesterday night. I had a mother who was ranting and raving. She was so upset. She was so angry that the father fed the boys hot dogs three nights in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it an optimal diet for two young boys? No, it is not. There is no dietitian in the world who will tell you, yep, let's do hot dogs three nights a week.
Right.
But if that mother keeps getting in the way of this father-son dynamic, father will leave and there will be no relationship. Let him be dad that he knows how to do. It is more important for them to maintain a relationship to the best of dad's ability than for mom to dictate exactly what's going to happen in his home, what they're going to eat and how they're going to play.
And I love what you said, Natasha, to the best of his ability. So it is one parent's responsibility not to, like you said, enforce what I would do as a parent, but to the best of that parent's ability, because the relationship and having the relationship is important, is what you're saying.
Correct. And what happens often, Terry, as the emotions kind of settle down and die down and the anger fades, the parent who may not have been a hands-on parent gets better and better because they no longer feel like they're being told what to do. You must do it my way. And they sort of wake up a little and they go, oh, wait a minute, what is a better way to approach this? So in this particular situation, the parent who is not a hands-on parent is the dad. He truly doesn't always know what's age appropriate, what to do with young boys. And so we talk about, in a parent coaching kind of format, what might you do on a Saturday with your boys?
Mm-hmm.
And I share resources, you know, a very simple resource is Metro Parent Magazine. Go to the website, see what's in town. That's not how he thinks, because that hasn't been his job all these years. He's been working 12-hour days.
Absolutely. So a little bit of empathy can go a long way.
And education.
Well, you know,
not control, but education.
Very good. Well, you know, Natasha, we are all out of time. First, if I have to just recap, the most important three factors you're talking about would be a lack of conflict between two parents and a very team-oriented co-parenting relationship. Financial stability would be number two, and a relationship with both parents.
Perfect summary, Terry.
Thank you. Well, excellent, excellent expert advice.
We have 10 more seconds. I would like to put in a plug for a support group that my nonprofit, Women's Divorce Resource Center, is starting on October 23rd. It's a six-week program. Please go to the website and check it out. You will get this type of information and more in a supportive, small group environment. I think it's going to be wonderful.
Yes, it is going to be wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Natasha. I love talking to you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And listeners, if you want to connect with Dr. Natasha Kendall, you can also visit her website at drsupernanny.com. She's also on Facebook at Parent Coach and on Twitter at Dr. Natasha K. And as always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here always to help your relationships be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, theLoveDoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's simple, practical, and easy to understand. Also, I have a new video course that's called How to Find Love in 7 Days. So if you're interested in finding the right person for you, check it out on my website under courses. I'm Dr. Terry. So until next time, here's to your healthy, happy relationship.